Joseph A. Klein. And Mr. Klein is a practicing lawyer, graduate of Harvard Law School, took courses in constitutional law, and he even studied under Professor Archibald Cox, who was, of course, best known for what happened during the Watergate era. But Mr. Klein, I think, as with myself and so many people at one time, thought the United Nations was the hope of the world. And then, of course, as time went by, he began to realize that United Nations was not necessarily the hope of the world, but had a real or presented a real threat to the survival of the sovereignty of our country. So with that as a background, Mr. Klein, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Well, now, what motivated you to write your book, Global Deception of the UN's Stealth Assault on America's Freedom?
Well, as you mentioned, when I was growing up during the Cold War, as a kid, I thought the UN provided us with the best opportunity and model for peace. I got active in high school, formed a UN model a club. I worked for a foreign UN mission as a teenager, and living in New York and working in New York, I was able to see the UN up front and close. And I got very disillusioned as the years went by, because the UN turned away from its original mission, envisioned by its architects, FDR, Harry Truman, and Winston Churchill, as a community of sovereign nations, mostly democracies at the time it was formed, to repel another Hitler-type aggression. Instead, the UN over the years has become an instrument for those who I call in global deception the globalists, the elitists, who want to use it as a forum to create international laws and norms to govern us and take over our day-to-day living. And this is what led me, really, to write Global Deception, because I think the story behind what's going on every day at the United Nations that you and I pay for, because we contribute almost a quarter of its budget, what they're doing and planning and creating documents all the time and trying to lobby sympathetic world leaders is against the interests of our country and to chip away at our freedoms.
Well, I think the most disturbing fact is the realization that there are people at the highest levels of our government who have sworn to uphold our Constitution and preserve our nation and protect it from all enemies, foreign and domestic, are themselves enemies of our nation. Their loyalty is not to America, but to this globalist dream of world government. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, yes, and in Global Deception, I profile some of these folks, and they include Americans. They include a professor of economics at Columbia, who used to be at Harvard, who has directed as a special advisor to Kofi Annan a huge wealth redistribution program called the Millennium Development Project. And what that's going to do, and it's got a lot of support from French President Jacques Chirac, even Mr. Blair in England and most of the developing world. And what it's going to do is take out from your pocket, my pocket, more than $70 billion a year, just from American taxpayers, go to governments in the developing world that are mostly corrupt, under the pretense that this will help lift them out of poverty.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Joseph Klein, his book, Global Deception. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest today is Mr. Joseph Klein. He was a lawyer and attended Harvard Law School. And, of course, during his early years, he was a supporter of the United Nations. And this dream of, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have an organization where all nations could come together and we could avoid war and we could help one another. But as time went by, he began to realize that there were people pushing the United Nations agenda who had no loyalty to America. They really wanted to establish a global government and, of course, to impoverish our people and transfer America's wealth to other nations. And behind this, there seemed to be almost an environmental agenda. And, of course, he writes extensively about things like the Earth Charter, which so many Americans have never heard of, and about Marie Strong, one of the most powerful men in the world, who is little known to the average American. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it is. And I'll tell you, as I did my research and delved into all of the documents that the UN and its bureaucracy produced, it just was shocking. And one thing that really stands out is this Earth Charter, and let me tell you, listeners, what that is. This is a document that was written by former Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev in the mid-90s, along with a high-level advisor to Kofi Annan, Maurice Strong. Maurice Strong is a very wealthy Canadian businessman who made his money in oil, but believed that it was his personal mission, which he has tried to pursue for several decades, to force the rest of the world, at least the industrial world, to give up our ways of consumption, give up our wealth, and turn to a much more pristine environment and turn our wealth over to the undeveloped countries, like our good professor from Columbia that I mentioned earlier.
Well, now, that's almost an insane idea. I mean, why would the American people want to turn all their wealth, and the things that they've worked for all of their lives, over to people in underdeveloped countries?
Well, you know, if we are able, through our elected representatives, to decide on the level of foreign aid or to give through voluntary contributions, that's the American way. And there are charities that are targeted to trying to truly alleviate real hunger in Africa and disease. The Gates Foundation is doing, I think, some very good things.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. We bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Klein, our guest this afternoon, a Harvard-trained lawyer, but he's written a book called Global Deception, trying to point out the problems inherent in the United Nations. He was talking about a document known as the Earth Charter, which was written by Mikhail Gorbachev and a man named Marie Strong, a multi-billionaire from Canada, and they seem to have a plan of trying to lower the living standards of the American people, get us back to a sort of a more pristine sort of environment like it was before the wicked white man came, and actually to redistribute the wealth to the American people. And I was simply asking, why would the American people go along with a plan to redistribute the wealth of our nation, and how do we know that that's really what they intend to do?
Well, we wouldn't go along with it consciously, but what's happening is you have these programs that are being snuck through all these many UN forums. You have proposals that I describe in Global Deception for global taxes, to take money out of our pockets through taxes on the Internet, things that we really are going to have a hard time controlling if most other countries go along with it. Taxes on every time you fill up your tank with gasoline, they want to impose a carbon tax. Every time you take a plane trip, they want to impose tax on airline tickets, and on and on. And all of this is really about enacting an agenda that the American people have had no say in. This isn't something that's coming through our elected representatives. These taxes are not enacted by accountable representatives in Congress. These are coming through bureaucrats and UN functionaries with a lot of help from multi-billionaire donors like George Soros, Ted Turner, and from all manners of non-governmental organizations that push these extreme environmental and wealth redistribution agendas. And, I wrote Global Deception to give many examples of how this is impinging on our freedoms, because unless we're vigilant, we're going to find that our own judges, that they're doing now in the Supreme Court even, are going to fall for these international norms and rules coming out of these UN forums and incorporate it into their interpretation of our Constitution. So even if we have a man like John Bolton representing us at the UN that looks out for us, and even if we have opposition in Congress to extending the UN's charter and into areas they don't belong and to try to make them reform. We still have our judges who are going to do mischief unless we keep an eye on them.
Well, of course, one of the things that we know that traditionally the purpose of our judges was to interpret the Constitution, but now they seem to be, when they make a decision on major issues, they seem to be going to the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights or to the United Nations Charter or other international laws to determine what American law is. How can they possibly do that when they've sworn to uphold the Constitution?
Well, particularly at the Supreme Court, you've got five justices, including leading justices of this trend, Breyer, Ginsburg, and Kennedy. They have lifetime appointments. They're on the court, and they decide that they would rather curry favor with what the rest of the world thinks than doing the hard work of reading the text of our constitutional provisions and applying the law. Looking at our history, they've cited treaties that the Senate never even ratified. Ginsburg did that in an affirmative action decision. Justice Breyer went so far in a dissenting opinion to cite the Supreme Court of Zimbabwe, not known for its reverence to liberty and individual rights. And we have Justice Kennedy, who recently decided that no matter how heinous the crime, a juvenile, even a few days below the age of 18, can never, no matter what the horrible circumstances may be, get the death penalty, even if the state legislature has approved of such a punishment and a jury so finds. And why did he do that? Because, in his view, it was against international norms and law. That's how he interpreted our Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, a cruel and unusual punishment.
But you, as a lawyer, you would feel that he really doesn't have the right to go to other countries to determine what the laws in America should be unless his loyalty is not to our country.
No, and in global deception, I propose some congressional restrictions, and Congress has the right under the Constitution to limit what our courts can do, even the Supreme Court, except in a few cases, the Congress can say that this is where you can go and this is where you can't go. And I propose a legislation to rein in this free-roaming tendency to go outside of our Constitution and incorporate all these crazy international norms. And also, as I mentioned in Global Deception, I recount the testimony of Justice Roberts before the Senate Judiciary Committee in his confirmation hearings, where he was asked about his philosophy of looking outside the Constitution and whether he would incorporate foreign law, and he said very clearly he would not, and he gives some very cogent reasons why he would not, and that's what we need. We need Judge Alito, we need other justices on the Supreme Court when there are more vacancies, and we need federal appellate judges below who will interpret the law as it's written in our Constitution and not turn to these vague, unaccountable bodies putting out these international norms that nobody even knows what they mean.
Well, Mr. Clarence, the thing that disturbs me is I think we have people on the court whose loyalty is not to the United States, but to this globalist dream, this dream that has been around for such a long period of time. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a world government? And so let me simply ask you the question, playing the devil's advocate, what's wrong with a world government? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have this, almost like utopia, we could do away with war, we could cooperate, we could actually do away with poverty and help people and stamp out disease. Don't we need a world government to do that? Couldn't we make a better world if we just give up a little of our sovereignty and embrace this dream?
Well, you know, if man were perfect and we found the perfect philosopher king that with a magic wand could make all of our problems go away, you know, maybe in some kind of fantasy utopia type of world, that would do some good. But that's never going to happen. So what we're going to do is we're going to turn over our rights, our liberties, to a body that's going to be beholden to some of the most autocratic regimes in the world. Remember the Human Rights Commission? Eleanor Roosevelt was behind its origination, and it was supposed to set out the charter for basic universal human rights. Well, who's running the show now? It's like the asylum. Insane are running the asylum.
I know Cuba was there for one of the...
We've got Cuba, we've got Libya, we've got Sudan. The United States was kicked off. Other examples. The recent summit meeting on the Internet held in Tunisia, which itself is one of the more repressive countries in the world. That was an attempt by Kofi Annan and a lot of powerful allies in Europe and China and Iran and other parts of the world to take control of the Internet from the United States, even though we created it. We invested the initial money that seeded the research, and our entrepreneurs commercialized the Internet, and it's the most open, freest platform for communication ever created in the history of man. And who did Kofi Annan appoint to the working group that planned the UN Internet Summit? Representatives from our good friends, China, Iran, Cuba, Pakistan. There were no U.S. government representatives on that working committee. So this is the reality. Utopia might be nice in the fantasy world, but the reality is we're going to be giving away our freedoms. We're going to be giving away our hard-earned money to a body of bureaucrats and others bent on mischief who will do it in much grander scale what they did with the money from the Oil for Food program.
And certainly you cover that in your book, and really how totally corrupt it is, and certainly Kofi Annan had to know what was going on. His son was one of the biggest criminals there, but I dare say that he'll never be punished.
No, Kofi Annan will, I think, survive his term at the end of next year. But, you know, the story I tell in Global Deception goes beyond the one man. I do have a pretty detailed profile of Kofi Annan. I describe in Global Deception his hypocrisy, how he has made fun of real reform while mouthing the words. I go back and I dug out one of his statements several years ago where he said, "Oh, reform, reform, reform. That's all you talk about, reform. We got work to do." Well, that was several years ago, and then we saw what their work was, the Oil for Food program. And so I do profile him and his key advisors, like Maurice Strong, we talked about, the author of the Earth Charter. But you get rid of some of these fellows, and you're still going to have an institution that is so suffused with a philosophy that they know best, that they don't need to enter their ideas in the marketplace of ideas and work through a democratic process. They just want to set up some kind of a unaccountable forum to issue their pronouncements and then ram them through wherever they can. And that's going to happen even if Kofi Annan leaves, unless we're careful.
And, of course, these people are fabulously well paid. They don't have to pay any income tax on this. They're sort of an elite all to themselves, aren't they, this ruling bureaucracy of the United Nations?
Well, you know, Kofi Annan gets over... $225,000, maybe up to $250,000 a year, plus a very fancy townhouse in one of the most exclusive areas of Manhattan, Sutton Place, and he gets all other kinds of perks. And he's got a whole bevy of subordinates reporting to him, each of whom make more money than our Secretary of State.
Hold that thought right back in just a moment. A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS,
the unnecessary epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know $4,000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolution.
Vitamins and minerals, and is made from only organic.
The UN's stealth assault on America's freedom. The word stealth came out of an internal memo. They lay out really Kennedy, Breyer, Ginsburg.
The army and their police force to stop them.
UN's plans. Great detail. Yeah.
Thank you.
What I've seen in the UN on guns is more this process I described, where they're going to set up a global forum next year to try again. They haven't succeeded so far because the U.S. has opposed it, and we're getting all kinds of flack for that, just like we're getting for the Kyoto Protocol and the Internet. But in any case, they're going to try to ram through one of these gun prohibition norms, and then maybe use it in local governments to get city councils to pass bans like San Francisco. But I think more ominously, they're going to try to use it in the courts to try to get unelected judges to make it the law of the land that the Second Amendment no longer protects individual rights to keep guns for our own safety and the safety of our families. That's what I think they're all about. And I based that on a research and
a lot of documents. Yeah, I appreciate that answer. Thank you, Dr. Steve.
And I think they're going to try to get it from both ends. I think they're really...
Right.
These people want to disarm the people, just as Adolf Hitler did, just as Joseph Stalin did, just as Chairman Mao did, just as they did in Rwanda. They disarmed the people, and of course that's why they hacked everybody to death with the machetes.
It's interesting, you know, just take a minute on Rwanda, because I also describe that in Global Deception, and I give that as the rationale why we can't trust the UN to do anything, certainly not to protect us. I quote from actually some correspondence from the general on the ground in Rwanda, a cable that went to Kofi Annan's deputy. At that time he wasn't Secretary General, he was the head of the peacekeeping operations of the UN. And the general on the ground said, we have been informed that there is an illegal cache of arms that the government is going to use to try to initiate a massacre. And he recommended that the UN force on the ground in Rwanda do a preemptive strike and destroy those arms. Kofi Annan's deputy turned him down flat. The massacre began just a few days after that.
And they were killing about 10,000 people a day, simply hacking them to death, while our government was doing everything to cooperate with the United Nations policy of non-intervention.
Non-intervention, because they didn't want to upset the apple cart. And a lot of people, a lot of innocent people, men, women, and children, died as a result. I'm not saying the UN could have stopped everything, but they didn't do anything.
They didn't even try. That's what's so unconscionable. Well, I really want to thank you very much for being our guest. It's been a pleasure, and I hope to have you on again. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners before we let you go, other than the fact they should read your book, Global Deception, The UN's Stealth Assault on American Freedom?
I just urge everybody to be alert to what's happening. Don't think of the UN as some kind of abstract, organization sitting in New York that really can't touch your lives, because it's being used by some very powerful people around the world to do just that, to take your money, to spend as they wish, and to take your freedoms away one by one.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll be talking to you again on Friday and late in the evening, but I appreciate you being willing to be on with us. I think your message is vitally important. Thank you so very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up today's program. But heed what Mr. Klein has said. There really is a program. May not make sense. But of course, behind this are sinister people and a sinister spiritual force that is motivating them.
This is a fascinating four-tape set, Genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America, the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-
Thank you.